You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry. Welcome to Meeting Pod. I'm Chris Scott, host of Meeting Pod and contributing editor at Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines. This special episode is the fourth and final segment in a series that builds upon the recent Power of Meat 2023 report that takes a closer look at the ongoing changes in consumers' habits and perceptions when it comes to buying meat. Our guest for our special series is Anne-Marie Roerink of 210 Analytics, the author of the report along with other meat studies and presentations, who will provide additional insights and updates on consumer trends. As a special bonus exclusively for Meeting Pod, Anne-Marie also will introduce new material using audio responses from consumer interviews that provide additional context to the findings beyond sales data. Thanks for joining us once again, Anne-Marie.
All right. Thanks for having me once again, Chris.
Our pleasure. For this final episode, let's take a look at what meat companies are doing right to grab consumer attention moving forward over the next 12 months or so. What are some of the concepts that are working that meat companies can enhance to continue spurring sales growth at retail?
That is not an easy question to answer, but as I was digging through the numbers to see, you know, what are some of those growth trends, it really occurred to me that one concept we always have to keep in mind in the meat industry is that of opportunity cost. And what I mean with that is sometimes we are all like four-year-olds playing soccer, where there's a little innovation, a little growth area, and push, all of us move on to that area. And in a way, that's what we've seen with organic and grass-fed and, of course, plant-based meat alternatives as well for a little while there. And in reality, those areas tend to have a core following, but a smaller following. And whether you look at claims or you look at what they're fed, grass-fed versus conventional, organic versus conventional, conventional in every single comparison is the lion's share of sales. And so I think a lot of the innovation is going to niche areas versus really focusing on the larger size of the pie, which is that conventional set of meat. And then the question becomes, you know, how do we drive permissibility? I feel good about eating meat and poultry. And how do we drive favorability? I just love it. It tastes great and want to have it all the time in conventional as well. And that's really where I'm seeing a little bit more focus here in the last couple of years, just coming out with maybe beef that is not necessarily grass-fed, but maybe a little bit better for the environment, or calling out some of the better animal welfare practices, or just really focusing on a favorable taste and, you know, the family togetherness, you know, everything that meat and poultry does for us nutritionally as well. So continuing to drive affordability, permissibility, favorability, those I think are really what the meat industry is doing right and will continue to focus on for the next, I suspect, 1 to 2 years at least.
So if the conventional momentum is there for these types of products winning a place in the household meal planning system, are there more traditional times when meat and poultry remain strong, like holidays? And what can meat companies do to potentially expand that market penetration at other times of the year?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll try to visualize this for you. If you look at the 52 weeks throughout the year and you were to do that in a little bar graph, what you see is around all the major holidays, all of a sudden that sales just spikes up. And those are, of course, the holidays like Thanksgiving, the end of the year, Christmas, New Year's, but also a lot of the summer holidays like Labor Day, Memorial Day, etc. So if you were to take that concept of people are willing to splurge a little bit more during celebrations and holidays, I would say there is a lot of perhaps, you know, opportunity in developing your own holidays. And we talked about this in one of our earlier podcasts, the idea of it's beef fest or, you know, we're really driving everything chicken across the entire store or whatever it might be. But at the same time, I think it's also celebrating those everyday moments. We sometimes, you know, focus a lot on the holidays, but we forget that there's a lot of opportunity to celebrate everyday life as well. And that's really where it might be giving them a little bit more time back through value added, or it might be introducing them through a completely new flavor or a completely new cut or kind. So really always focusing on what can meat do for you and how do we really drive that favorability. I think that is the big lesson that comes out of those holidays in order to also emphasize those opportunities in everyday life.
Are the companies that are promoting their products, are they listening to consumers beyond the sales, or are there ways that they can improve on that feedback in order to better understand what the consumer is looking for from the outset?
You know, over the last 12 months, I've been really encouraged to see the marketing and outreach change quite a bit. So, of course, for 30 years, we have been setting up the meat department for the boomer shopper. The boomer draws their inspiration from meals that they've cooked before. They know how to cook. And of course, they're very comfortable cooking across all the different kinds and cuts as well. But then we see younger consumers just having a host of different ways in which they decide what's for dinner, whether that's a Google search or TikTok or what have you. And what we're seeing is a lot of the meat companies trying to move into those spaces so that when people are deciding what's for dinner, they are finding meals that use the particular meats and poultry cuts and kinds that they like to use and maybe introduces them to something new. So I believe we have a clip if we want to listen to that.
Absolutely.
I usually will Google something, look it up on the internet. I have several cookbooks at home, but I think this day and age, the internet is just a lot easier to find exactly what you're looking for, answer quickly.
Usually I'll just Google. We just made a pork tenderloin the other day and we were looking for a new recipe. So I would, you know, Google pork tenderloin recipes. And of course, you know, 5,000 different recipes come up. And I would say that the one that has the number of positive reviews, the highest number of positive reviews, is usually the one I go to.
In terms of inspiration, I do all of my menu planning on Pinterest. And there might be a trend on Instagram or TikTok that I'm seeing that I might want to scope out.
I would say the other place, if I'm trying something like totally new, it's really looking on, like Googling, looking on a website and scrolling down to find just any like easy recipe. Usually I'm searching for something like easy, healthy recipe. I'm not a good cook, to be honest. And so I actually like really do rely on very specific instruction.
So this is a channel that these processors and marketers definitely need to tap into if they want to continue growth in the different demographic than they're used to, being the boomers and Gen X. What do you think it will take beyond what's going on right now for them to really get involved in these kinds of channels?
I think listening to these clips, I mean, it's always fun to think back to when we were doing the interviews, but listening to them, I think there is a couple of really good insights here, which is, first of all, you know, some of them mentioned, yeah, well, we have a cookbook, but it's really a whole lot easier to Google is what we hear a lot. And then we dig a little bit deeper and people talk about YouTube, they talk about TikTok and those kinds of things. But you heard several talk about, you know, I land on the one that looks good. So here again, we talked in our last episode about we eat with our eyes first.
Right.
And I would say, you know, one of the things that TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, they all have in common is that the visual replaces the keyboard. And it's really more about beautiful imagery. And, you know, typically we talk about produce in that regard, but, you know, this is really where the market has shifted from raw meat to what do you do with it? And if we look at some of the examples that we're seeing in the store, for instance, on the sales signage, all of a sudden you see the sales price, but also a full meal that is prepared right with it. And so really leveraging those visuals, leveraging the channels that people are at, but also shoppable recipes, you know, really close that intersection between people finding a recipe that they like and being able to add those ingredients to the shopping basket or the shopping lists are big, important trends going forward.
So it's both the processors and marketing departments, as well as the retailers themselves, that need to step up and recognize that this is where things are going.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, a full circle kind of thing where, you know, you can actually drive a lot of brand loyalty this way as well, where if people start to realize that they really love your particular brand or your particular grocery store's recipe, now you can actually start to evolve them into different cuts and kinds after you build up that trust. And, you know, what better than all these online resources to also integrate a little bit about strategies relative to the planet, the animal welfare, all of that, different recipes, nutrition information, and just really your philosophy on life. Because as we are moving toward those younger generations, we definitely see a lot of those, you know, other reasons starting to become more important, whether that's planet, animal, taking care of your communities, etc.
Now, in terms of, we've discussed this earlier, in-store examples, cooking demonstrations and sampling, are those other potential avenues that processors and marketers can use to give more inspiration to the shoppers as they're in the aisles?
Oh, absolutely. Sampling has always been extremely powerful. It's just very hard to do operationally. Now, I was recently running a panel and I had a small independent operator on that panel. And what he did is he develops his own marinades and such. And so he actually cooks a lot of the meat. He invested in 5 Instant Pots and a series of air fryers. And he cooks his own meat. He's known for that. People drive a long distance to come see him.
Wow.
But then when people love it, he says, oh, by the way, I sell the same value-added meat in the meat department, and you can make this at home as well. So this is kind of that full circle that we talked about.
Absolutely.
Don't just be the inspiration, but also always look at that next purchase.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a quick break for a word from our exclusive sponsor of our special series, Cryovac Brand Food Packaging.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Cryovac Brand Food Packaging. Is your packaging carrying its weight when it comes to marketing your products? Let your package amplify your message with Cryovac Brand Food Packaging and Prismic. Our cutting-edge digital packaging solutions transform your package into an always-on advertising channel, specifically targeting your preferred audience. Give your package a voice and connect directly with your customers. Visit SealedAir.com to learn more about our digital packaging solutions. Now back to today's podcast.
And we're back. Now, the report indicates that about a third of the survey respondents are trying to eat less meat. And one way they achieve this is by consuming smaller portions and incorporating meat as an ingredient in meals they prepare instead of center of the plate. Are there smarter strategies that can help the meat industry more directly meet consumers at the intersection, as you described, of inspiration and purchase decision?
Yeah, so The Power of Meat was released in March of 23. I recently conducted, about a month ago, some updates on this, and we continue to see a lot of focus on buying less by leveraging different portion sizes. Of course, we also see a lot of focus on grinds, where people can stretch the meat dollar a little bit easily. So a lot of retailers have been experimenting with different ways, different package sizes and such. And there is a risk in that, absolutely, because we are seeing that when you offer different package sizes, we see a number of consumers, especially the lower income consumer, move toward that smaller package sizes. So what we're seeing retailers do quite a bit is the mix and match packaging to make sure that they don't just leave the store with the one smaller package of meat, but for instance, have 5 different smaller packages for $20 and really pushing people toward still spending the money, but in a different way with a little bit more variety. And of course, if we think about the number of one-person households and the focus on not wasting as a way to save money as well, there is a lot happening with smaller portions, but there's certainly a little bit of risk in it without, you know, some marketing knowledge there.
And I think on the other side of, generationally speaking, older people, aging boomers, et cetera, also are buying less meat. They have smaller homes, 2 people, 1 person. And I think that's an effect as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and then that's something to keep in mind. You know, we tend to focus on the lower ages to see what the future might look like. But we have to keep in mind that the boomer generation still represents around 30% of the meat dollar. So they're still very, very powerful in our department. And you're absolutely right. Their households are becoming smaller. As people age, they simply tend to eat a little bit less meat. And we're actually even seeing some of the boomers, especially those on the older side of the boomer generation, move a little bit more into frozen, where they've stopped cooking elaborate meals or are leveraging freezing items at home. So that's something else to keep in mind also. And then, of course, looking to see some of the dollars leak toward the deli department, et cetera. But yes, a lot of shifting happening right now.
So is there any sign that some of this shifting is going to calm down at some point down the road?
You know, I think so. We are seeing that, you know, there's simply tremendous pressure on income right now and across departments that is resulting in unit and volume pressure per our data partner, Circana. But at the same time, there are some signs that items that have seen some significant deflation, and I'm thinking about bacon, for instance, or in our seafood counterpart, crab is a really good example where deflation is resulting in increased demand. So it is showing that that cost component is just our biggest headline right now, and it's something that we need to manage.
Very much so. Now, your research indicates that nearly two-thirds of consumers are looking for better meat and poultry options in order to address concerns about meat in their diets. Should meat processors adjust their approaches when it comes to marketing to people looking for specific components regarding their meat consumption habits?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting question, and the Power of Meat asks it every single year, which is that, are you looking at all for better for you, better for the animal, better for the planet, and better for the farmer slash worker? And even though we did not see the numbers for planet, animal, and worker move very much, we saw a decrease in the number of people looking for items that are a little bit better for them. And I'm seeing this across studies. I just finished a frozen study, and there it dropped by almost 15 percentage points. So wow. Leveraging that cost versus health is something that people are doing for sure. So yes, definitely stay tuned for Power of Meat 24 and see where that lands.
And I think we have a clip now on why people are eating less. Let's take a listen.
I do think about it. And that's one of the main reasons why I went into being vegan before, because it does concern me how the animals are treated.
I know that, you know, we probably shouldn't be eating all these hormones. I'll pay an extra $1.50 or whatever for the little flyer that has the hen of the month and it has the picture and it tells you all about how happy Rosie is. And I don't have any guilt eating Rosie's egg.
I don't pay too much attention. I think it's all horse hockey stuff anyway.
For me, at least, I try and look out for the organic foods just solely for that purpose.
You know, you're shipping stuff from God knows how many miles away in diesel trucks, and, you know, the impact that just bad farming practices have in general on the environment. I'm really not happy with most of that.
Honestly, no.
Yeah, you know, I think about living in Colorado, I think about water.
The alternatives that we've been given aren't totally viable, right? Aren't as reliable, oftentimes have their own dramatic environmental consequences that aren't obvious.
It is crazy just how much, you know, farming and just the food industry does impact, you know, just overall the environment.
You know, you see the change, the radical changes to the environment, kind of want to do something about it. Of course, avoiding using, you know, recycle more, avoid using plastic, and
tribute something. I wouldn't say no, but I think it's infinitesimally small compared to what the Earth's been going through for millions of years.
Knowledge we have and the more informed decisions we can make based on the history of the food is becoming a bigger factor every day.
I kind of feel like a hypocrite because I want to buy with my conscience, I guess, but I'm a realist as well.
It would be lovely to have more transparency.
But, you know, I've been on tours at dairy farms and seeing how those cows are taken care of. And I'm aware of all that. So environmentally and ecologically and humanitarian wise, all of that's important.
More than the dollar, it's about the impact that you're having on society. If you actually want people to buy your products and help society, you need to help them at every step of your process.
Yeah, so clearly we had three different areas here. First, we had people react to animal welfare, then the planet, and then sort of that entire concept, because that's really important to keep in mind, Chris. It's In the mind of the consumer, these are not standalone issues. We see that people believe if the animal was treated better, then the meat is better for them as well. We see a great care of the environment, and they believe that when the industry takes better care of the environment and thinks about the planet, then that is also better for them. And a lot of times that's when their eyes go to organic. And then the last set of clips, I think, were just fascinating from the sense that people truly believe it is full circle. And if you want to do the right thing, then they want you to really move in all of those different areas. Now, the most interesting thing of all is across studies, I've asked the question, well, do you see brands doing this? Do you see brands talk about animal welfare or the planet, et cetera? Or do you think that brands focus on this, just the meat industry in general? And by and large, whether I ask this question in candy or in frozen or in meat or in produce, we're seeing only about 10% of consumers believing that their respective industries are very active in the areas of planet, community, et cetera. And of course, in reality, the vast majorities of our listeners, whether you're with retail or with on the packer processor side, are constantly keeping all those areas in mind. So the big conclusion really is people feel better knowing that you take care of the planet, take care of the animal, take care of the community. So it is not self-serving to talk about it. You just give them another reason to love you.
And it also sounds like that crosses several generations. It isn't something that the youngsters are thinking about only, but also elderly and middle-aged, et cetera.
Yeah, so we are seeing some generational gaps. So you heard one gentleman believing that animal welfare is really just in people's minds, and right. He does not believe agriculture has a lot of impact on the planet. And yes, that is our 80-year-old. Yes. And then you heard two college students who used, I believe, the word unreal. It is unreal how much impact the agriculture has on planet. And those are people that, you know, in length talked about the fact that even though they have very little money, they buy or try to buy organic because they believe it's better all the way around. The other 19-year-old, she was shifting around in her chair, visibly uncomfortable, saying, well, I believe meat is really important, but I wish one day I will have the money to vote with my wallet and buy organic meat and poultry and eggs. And so I go back to that permissibility piece, right? At the end of the day, if people feel good that all meat and poultry is delicious, nutritious, treated correctly, raised humanely, and safe to eat, then I believe that that permissibility will be the tide that lifts all boats. And I don't think that is an area where we compete as much as where we cooperate to make sure that the permissibility is as high as it can be.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, finally, the meat industry is known for using specific claims when marketing such products labeled as organic, no added hormones, and no antibiotics ever, among other concepts on packaging. What should the industry do to better reach out to the 5 out of 10 respondents who indicated that production claims are not necessarily a priority when they shop for meat and poultry?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting area because as the recessionary pressure is growing, and yes, we've all seen that inflation is starting to moderate a little bit, but we have to keep in mind that inflation is still sitting at 5, 6, 7%. And that is on top of double digits, on top of high single digits. So at the end of the day, people are paying between 25 and 30% more for their groceries, including meat and poultry, today than they did prior to the pandemic. So what we're seeing is that collective impact of inflation, having racked up credit card debt, having taken money out of savings, all of that is resulting in a lot of pressure on people's decisions. And in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 months, we're seeing that really translate into below average performance for areas such as organic, grass-fed, et cetera, that of course come at a price differential. And that goes back, Chris, a little bit to the discussion that we started with, which is we have to keep in mind what is a niche opportunity with an audience that ultimately is only so big. And what is an opportunity that everybody feels good about? And it goes back to investing on the conventional side, whether that's beef, pork, chicken, etc., and really investing in that favorability of taste. Like, for instance, the pork industry is working so much on teaching people that fat isn't a bad thing. It adds beautiful flavor, not to overcook pork. So really making sure that when people buy pork, they have a favorable experience. And then at the same time, on the beef side, we see investments into making sure people truly understand the impact on the environment compared to that of transportation, energy, etc. So there's a lot happening in those areas really to underscore the permissibility along with favorability and affordability. I continue to go back to those three big areas that I believe continue to be in the spotlight for the remainder of the year and next year as well.
And driving consumer demand, obviously. Thank you so much. That's a wrap for the fourth of our four Meeting Pod episodes on meat buying trends among today's consumers in the first half of the year and beyond. Our thanks to Anne-Marie Roering of 210 Analytics and to the annual Meat Conference, the Food Marketing Institute, and the Foundation for Meat and Poultry Research and Education that commissioned the original report. And of course, thanks to you, our Meeting Pod listeners. Until next time.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeat.net.